It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life with your host, Alan Gervie. Alan is the managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm which has represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Hi, I am Alan Gervie, and this is Gervie's Law. So a few weeks ago, it was Father's Day, and a lot of you listened to the show when I actually had my two kids, 10-year-old Harper and 11-year-old Hudson, on the show. And we talked about a lot of things father. One of the things I talked about was that I had just been the week before, or a couple weeks before that, at my college reunion, and my kids talked about how they enjoyed staying in the dorms at the college reunion. They had so much fun. I wasn't just talking about staying in the dorms. I've done that and been there, done that. So I was more focused on a couple of different sessions that I actually went to at the reunion. They were discussion sessions, and one of them was at my philosophy department, which I majored in, my philosophy department building, and I sat in a discussion group, and it was called Objective Reasoning and Philosophy. Just what I went back to my college reunion for, to talk about objective reasoning and philosophy. And the reason why this topic is timely is because it suggests that people can separate their own ideas and their own opinions from maybe observations, from facts, from experiences that they have. In other words, it's separating out biases, separating out politics, separating out money interests, and maybe previous experiences from the logical consideration of assessing a situation and dealing with that situation based on the facts. It was a really interesting discussion as I sat in my philosophy department in the old chairs that I used to sit in. They didn't really change them over the years. And I bring this up now for a couple of reasons. One is that my guest today not only graduated from the same college that I'm talking about, Brown University, and we were actually there at the same time, although I don't think that we knew each other, but also because he's running for LA County District Attorney, and his focus has been on separating and removing politics from prosecutorial decisions, easy for you to say, restoring the independence of the position of DA, and bringing honesty to address criminal issues and protect the public. These are ideas that have seemingly been lost in today's society, as we see bipartisan politics entering almost everything. As a lawyer for the last 30 years, I've seen it in judicial decisions, and I've seen motivations that are not on facts, not on law, but are on biases, predispositions, prejudicial ideas, and politics, both by judges, juries, and, of course, by lawyers. So Nathan Hochman is running for district attorney for LA County. He's a former federal prosecutor, former U.S. Assistant Attorney General for the Tax Division. He's a leading expert in tax law, criminal defense, and environmental law. He was president of Los Angeles City Ethics Commission from 2011 to 2016. And in March of this year, he advanced to the general election runoff against the incumbent, George Gascon. He's raised a lot of funds, and here he is on Gervie's Law. Nathan, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Great to be on. Thank you very much.
It's great to have you. And I will tell you, before Karen Bass was elected as mayor, she was on the show, and I talked about the crime rate. I talked about the homelessness. I talked about traffic. And then I said to her, why do you want this gig? And she laughed. I'm going to ask you the same question, Nathan. You've been campaigning, doing a great job. Why do you want the gig?
So thank you again for having me on. The reason I want this gig is that I'm a lifelong Angeleno. I was born here. I grew up here. I've been married 31 years here in Los Angeles, and I raised my three children, who are now in their 20s, right here. And I'm not going to let a guy come in from San Francisco, destroy our public safety, and run me out of town. There have been plenty of Los Angelenos, sadly, and who've decided that it wasn't the high taxes, the traffic, the smog, the earthquakes that forced them to leave. It's when you introduce fear into the mix, fear for themselves, fear for their families, fear to go outside, not just at night, but fear to go outside during the day. Being concerned if you wear a certain watch or carry a certain purse when you sit in an outdoor restaurant, then you go back to your car and fear that that car has been broken into, again, for the first time probably in your whole life. And then when you take that car back to your house, your apartment, fear that your house or apartment now has been broken into. That fear is pervading our society and is not just based on people's sense of it, but the actual statistics out there. Because violent crime is up every single year George Gascon has been into office compared to the year he entered office. Property crimes are up double digit. Hate crimes are up over 100%. Fentanyl poisonings will kill more 18 to 35-year-olds than anything else out there. And we're the capital of human trafficking. So George Gascon has utterly failed in keeping us safe, us and our families. And because I don't want to leave, because I'm going to fight for the community I love, I have a fairly unique skill set. 34 years as a criminal justice advocate on the prosecution and defense side, and will take that skill set to become an effective DA from day one.
Nathan, you mentioned San Francisco, and it just brings back a memory I had on my show, Chase Aboudin, and he's the former San Francisco district attorney. What did we learn? And he was recalled, of course. What did we learn from that experience? How do you compare Chase's situation where he was recalled to what we're going through here in L.A. County?
So Chase Aboudin was effectively the George Gascon of San Francisco. They both believe in these extreme policies where you release violent and serious offenders before they serve their full sentences, and you don't prosecute them to the full extent of the law in the first place. Yet you actually promise people that safety is going to get better, and that's the promise that Chase Aboudin broke in San Francisco. That's the same promise George Gascon has broken here in L.A. because we've become a lot less safe than safer as they promised. I think the lesson from the Chase Aboudin recall is that San Francisco is 92% Democrat. And San Franciscans looked at what Chase Aboudin had done to their city, and God, he helped destroy it, along, by the way, with the former district attorney, which was George Gascon. I mean, George Gascon was in there for 8 years before Chase Aboudin took over. And they said, enough is enough. And I think what happened here in L.A. is that for reasons that a court will have to figure out one day, we didn't get enough signatures to get the Gascon recall on the ballot. But now he can't duck the election, this November 5th election. In the primary, he got a historic low of 25% of the vote. No DA ever sitting for re-election has gotten so few votes. And it means that my job is to unify the 75% of the people who rejected him that literally cut across all political, demographic, and geographic lines, from Democrat, Republican, Independent, from Black, White, Latino, Asian, every religious group, and the entire geography of L.A. County. I mean, we're talking from literally from Long Beach to Lancaster, from Santa Monica to the San Gabriel Valley. And these folks, and I've gone ahead and put literally thousands of miles on my car now, these folks don't agree on much.
Which folks?
We're talking folks from the entire county of Los Angeles, probably the millions of people who rejected George Gascon on election night. What they agree on is this: George Gascon has failed them as district attorney, that they feel less safe today than the day he entered office, that they desperately want him out of office. And when they get to know anything about me, and the fact that I bring 34 years of criminal justice experience as a prosecutor and a defense attorney, my roles with being the president of the L.A. City Ethics Commission, running a litigating division in the U.S. Department of Justice, the balanced approach I will bring to criminal safety, the fact that I will focus on root causes, I will focus on making sure that we deal with all criminals at a proportional level. When they hear that, they are absolutely prepared to vote Nathan Hochman into office.
Now, you promote yourself as an independent prosecutor. And while politics isn't supposed to enter into the DA conversation, you did run previously as a Republican, not as a DA, of course. Why do you promote yourself as an independent, and what does that mean?
Certainly. So I think a DA has to be independent. In fact, it's a nonpartisan race, which means that party affiliation will actually not be on the ballot next to my name and George Gascon's name. And why is that? Because you actually want your DA to resolve cases based on only two things, the facts and the law, and not my personal political agenda like George Gascon, who is predetermined without considering the facts and the law that there are just certain crimes and certain criminals he will not prosecute. If you're a juvenile and you steal under $950, George Gascon gives you a pass. If you want to use a gun in connection with a robbery, George Gascon won't file the gun enhancement. If you commit a violent crime and you're part of a gang, George Gascon will not file the gang enhancement. And again, it's not because there's facts lacking in that case or that the law changed. It's literally his personal political agenda.
So what is that personal political agenda?
His personal political agenda is essentially, if he actually was here, he would tell you his story about systemic racism starts in the 1850s when he says that the police were initially set up to retrieve fugitive slaves. He then takes that systemic racism narrative into the police, into the prosecutors, into prisons, takes that through the 20th century, takes that to the 21st century, and effectively says we need to treat the criminals as victims of the system, which in many ways just infantilizes.
We're both having that same problem
absolutely.
Today.
Absolutely. Infantilizes people.
Right.
And saying you don't have free will, that because you were born into a certain situation, that you are locked and loaded and you cannot change your course in life.
Doesn't that encourage, and don't start talking about free will, we talked about Brown University, my philosophy degree. You were at Brown. What was your major, by the way?
History and international relations.
Okay, international relations. It was big then. But let me ask you about the free will part, because isn't that just an excuse for criminals to, if you say you don't have free will, an excuse to get in trouble and then not be prosecuted to the fullest because it wasn't your fault. It was predetermined, as Skinner would say.
Absolutely. It's an excuse. And again, I've been on the defense side for 24 years. It's an excuse that many defendants will make, that it wasn't me, it was my circumstances that forced me to commit these crimes. Again, it's a situation where you look at it and you decide, okay, we actually have to recognize the problems, the root causes of the problems. And to the extent that George Gascon has done anything useful in his 3.5 years, he's highlighted a lot of those problems. It's his solutions that I could not disagree with more. Because if you tell criminals that we're going to move the line in your favor, they're all of a sudden going to act according to where you have moved the line. So if you tell, for instance, juveniles, we're not going to prosecute you. If you go into a 7-Eleven, you go take a couple six-packs of beer, it's not a shock that that's exactly what they're doing. They actually did a flash mob at a 7-Eleven where you had all these people, most of them under 18, just ransacking the store, knowing, literally, that they actually won't be prosecuted. In fact,
and where's the deterrence there?
And that's the whole issue. Because when the system is working correctly, it doesn't fill. And let me make this clear. My goal is not to fill the prisons to the breaking point. That's actually the failure of the system. Where the system actually works well is that the prosecutor sets the line down, which is in the lines of the laws, consistently, fairly, and impartially imposes or prosecutes on those laws and enforces those laws with real consequences on the other side. So that the criminals understand that, no, you're not bluffing. No, the line is not going to change in your favor. And if you do the crime, you're going to end up doing the appropriate punishment, hopefully, and thereby deterring the criminals from committing the crimes in the first place and saving a whole lot of victims that otherwise would be victimized by those actions.
When I started the show, I talked about the objective reasoning and philosophy. Doesn't that translate into what people want to see in society and civilization in order to feel protected and in order to understand that they have prosecution that is actually going to focus on facts and not just have a general bias that will dictate policies in criminal law?
Oh, 100%. I mean, if you think about it, what makes the criminal justice system work is the belief that people have that if you actually are victimized by a crime, you don't have to take a gun in or take justice into your own hands. If someone shoots one of your relatives, that you don't have to pick up a gun and shoot them and their family back. That's the Wild West. If someone goes ahead in your store and takes some stuff from your store and doesn't pay for it, that you don't take out a bat and beat the bejesus out of them. That you can call the police, you give them the evidence, the police will bring the prosecution, the DA then will do its job and bring that prosecution into court. The person will be held accountable for their actions and ideally then send the message to the next person contemplating about stealing from your store that don't do it because there are actual real consequences. When you remove those consequences, though, that's when you start to impinge the whole system because victims stop believing that they can actually get justice from the system and may take justice into their own hands. And we absolutely have to prevent that.
And you mentioned the situation in San Francisco and the primarily Democratic base. Do you have any concerns about that here in L.A. County, where it's known as a Democratic stronghold, where they try to keep consistent with their beliefs, maybe not as harsh in the way of punishing criminals?
Well, again, where George Gascon is going to try to paint me is some MAGA Republican hell-bent on reestablishing the mass incarceration of the 1990s.
But you didn't vote for Donald Trump.
I didn't vote for him in 2016, 2020. I won't be voting for him in 2024.
Who are you going to vote for? There's no one to vote for. But that's another issue.
That's another issue. And I'm also pro-choice my whole life. You know, I believe January 6th was a political insurrection. And yes, I believe in science as well. But back to this issue is that you've got a situation in our society where George Gascon's going to try and paint me, for instance, as a MAGA Republican. Let me tell you my political journey. Let me tell you George Gascon's political journey, because he's saying he's the Democrat against the former Republican. My journey, 20 years a Democrat, 20 years a centrist Republican. Now I'm an independent, running for an independent position where you want your DA to be independent of a political agenda. George Gascon spent his first 38 years as a Republican. His next 13 is a Democrat. So when he says this is a Democrat versus a former Republican, I assume he's just talking about himself as the former Republican, because he's been a former Republican longer than I have, and I've been a Democrat in my life longer than he has. But this is all he has to talk about, because he can't run on his experience, because he literally has never prosecuted or defended a single criminal case in his entire life. And I have 34 years of experience of doing exactly that with hundreds of cases. He's certainly not going to run on that record of failure of public safety. So his last desperate alternative is to try and go ahead and politicize this race and basically tell people that, oh, just vote for your party. Don't actually vote on the person who's going to keep you and your family safe for the next 4 years. And that is the failure. That is the Achilles heel of his entire campaign strategy, is that he thinks people are that stupid, and they are not. People are out there infuriated about their safety, and they are looking at the DA as responsible for the safety. He has failed given his chance to succeed, and now they need to bring in a new DA like myself.
Now, your father was one of the first graduating class from UCLA, and as you move toward this very important position, what did you learn from him? Obviously, he had struggles back in those days at UCLA and going through his career. What did you learn that will help you as you face off with Gascon?
So what's interesting is that my dad had to confront anti-Semitism early in his life. He confronted it when he lived in Canada, when he came here.
Where in Canada did he live?
Toronto.
Okay, that's where I'm from. So a lot of coincidences here. Brown University in Toronto. But just a quick story. My dad was trying to get into medical school, but back in those days there were quotas, and they only allowed like two Jews to get into medical school. He ended up being a pharmacist because he was an apprentice that had to go through a lot of training because he couldn't get in. So I'm sure your dad was facing some of those challenges.
Absolutely. And in fact, my dad graduated in UCLA Law's first class, the class of 52. And actually was the first one to take the bar because he ended up going directly into the Air Force and had to actually have passed the bar before he went into the Air Force.
My dad was in the Air Force, too. He was a radar guy in the Air Force. Who
a lot
knew?
Of coincidences. but the experience my dad had, the class of 52, is very interesting because my dad, like Sandra Day O'Connor, also Stanford class of 52, they shared something in common. Neither one could get a job in most of the downtown Los Angeles law firms at that time. My dad, because he was Jewish, Sandra Day O'Connor, because she was a woman.
Right.
And so he throughout his next 50 plus years, he ended up being the chair of the Jewish Federation. He ended up being a national director of the ADL. He became very involved in the community and working with communities across Los Angeles.
You followed in those footsteps.
And I have done my best to follow in his footsteps. My mom actually was also a chair of the Jewish Federation. And I think if my dad were alive today and he saw what was going on with the pro-Hamas movement, that they have basically gone from taking words and translated that into illegal conduct, and that the DA has done nothing. When they shut down the 110 freeway, where was Gascon? He was missing in action. When they shut down LAX, where are the arrests? Where's Gascon? Silence. When they go ahead and defile college campuses and vandalize property, where's Gascon? Gone. And most recently, last Sunday at the Adas Torah Synagogue, on Pekel Robertson, the heart of the Jewish community here in Los Angeles, when you have over 150 violent and anti-Semitic protesters screaming and actually harming
and
Jewish
people. And blocking the entrance to the synagogue.
And committing a whole variety of illegal crimes. And Gascon is absolutely silent. What he would tell me and what I have done my best to do is he said, look, silence does not work in the face of anti-Semitism. Silence doesn't work in the face of violence. You need to be heard from. And it's interesting that President Biden has weighed in. You had Mayor Bass, you had Governor Newsom, you had state legislature, city council people. But where is our DA who's in charge of prosecuting that crime? Where is the DA telling these criminals that here is the line, I'm going to consistently, fairly, and impartially enforce it, and there's the real consequences? So if you want to go from screaming words into illegal conduct, you will be held accountable for your actions.
And doesn't it just promote more of the same behavior? Can't we expect here in LA County, unfortunately, to see more of these anti-Semitic demonstrations and protests, which are not lawful and not peaceful, if someone doesn't stop it at its root?
100%. I mean, what the failure to act actually does is it emboldens criminals because they figure, like, my goodness, I can shut down a freeway, an airport. I can go ahead and literally harm people in front of a synagogue, and the DA will or defile a college campus, and the DA will do nothing. He won't even speak out on the issue. Well, then why don't we just keep going?
Yeah, we only have about 3 or 4 more minutes. Want to talk a little bit about the endorsements. You've gotten several endorsements, some very important ones. Recently, Rick Caruso is on your side, and a litany of them. If you look on your website, and it's nathanhockman.com.
Yes.
And it's I'm sure you say it all the time. It's not a K, it's an H.
Yeah, it's Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N. Hockman is H-O-C-H-M-A-N.com.
And there's a list of all of the endorsements. What does that mean to you?
So endorsements are incredibly important in the sense that a person is willing to put their own credibility behind your campaign. So most recently this week, when Rick Caruso, one of the sort of greatest civic leaders here in Los Angeles, says, I endorse Nathan Hockman, not George Gascon, which he had done back in 2020. But he says, look, I gave Gascon his chance and he failed. And I'm endorsing Nathan Hockman in this race. I mean, along with, for instance, Jackie Lacey, the first Democratic African-American woman to hold the DA position. Steve Cooley, you know, who also held the position for 3 terms. I've got over 65 local elected city leaders, half Democrat, half Republican, have all endorsed me. I've got Max and Rory Kennedy, 2 of RFK's kids, have endorsed me.
Rory Kennedy was on the show, by the way. She's wonderful.
Absolutely. And then I even have 6 of my opponents. None have endorsed Gascon. 6 have endorsed me. 4 of them are Democrats. 3 actually work for Gascon. And they've all said consistently, this is not about politics. This is about which DA is going to keep us and our family safe for the next 4 years. Gascon has failed, and Hochman can get the job done.
And it seems like you're on a roll, because before the primaries, it looked like Gascon really had some support. But since then, when we're down to you against him, don't you feel a wave of support where the actual support is coming toward your way, away from him, when there's a choice between two candidates?
Absolutely. I think what would have happened in the primary, we had 12 candidates. So the anti-Gascon support, if you want to look at it like that, was split amongst 11 challengers. Now there's only one left, myself. And I am basically coalescing all that support, bringing it together. And these people, they share one thing in common. They want Gascon out of office.
They want him gone. Gascon gone.
They want Gascon gone. Exactly.
So we only have 30 seconds. Tell us, people who are interested in your campaign, where can they go? NathanHochman.com. What else?
So we're on X, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, the entire work. So please start with the website and then go on to the social media. Please follow me, and we will bring this home come November 5th. Gascon will be gone, and Nathan Hochman will be your next district attorney.
Thanks for being with us, Nathan, today. We really appreciate it, and good luck in
the
election. Thanks for listening to Gervie's Law. We'll see you next week.
This show is pre-recorded and furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.